Our thanks to MediCress for sponsoring the June episode of Practical Significance. Their product, Epicos AI, offers a comprehensive AI-driven ecosystem, redefining research from study design to publication. The integrated modules ensure methodological rigor, providing validated tools for protocol development, biostatistical analysis, and reporting. Exclusively for ASA members, Epicos AI offers a 1-week full access trial. Simply create an account at epicosai.com and enter code Houston in the Have a Promo Code section of your personal dashboard. Empower your entire research journey and build confidence in your science with Epicos AI. Thanks again to MediCrest for supporting the Practical Significance podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, everyone, we are super excited to welcome you to the June episode of Practical Significance because we get to talk about the clinical trial certificate program, which we've been planning for well over a year now. So I'm delighted to have Jihan and Nolan with us to share some insights about how the program developed and what folks can look forward to. But we always start by asking them to tell us about their day job. So Nolan, we'll start with you.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on. And it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Nolan Wages. I'm a professor in the Department of Biostatistics at Virginia Commonwealth University School of Public Health in Richmond. I also serve as the director of the Biostatistics Shared Resource for VCU's Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center. My research primarily focuses on the design of early phase clinical trials in oncology. I do that from a statistical methodology standpoint, as well as collaborate with cancer center members in designing and analyzing their trials. And I teach clinical trial related coursework for our PhD program in the Department of Biostatistics.
Great. Thank you. And Jihan, you really probably don't need any introduction to our listeners, but tell us about your day job.
Thank you, Donna and Ron, for having me. I'm very, first of all, excited to talk about this clinical trial certificate program and share with statisticians and data scientists through this podcast. I am Jihan Lee, professor of biostatistics at the University of Florida and associate director for cancer quantitative sciences at the UF Health Cancer Institute. I also, like Nolan, I also lead the biostatistics and computational biology shared resource at the Cancer Institute. Of course, most recently, I served as the president of the American Statistical Association. My daily work, in addition to teaching courses and mentoring students, involves collaborating with clinicians and researchers on cancer clinical trials and translational research. Much of my work focuses on study design and statistical leadership and helping use data to answer important questions in cancer research and patient care. So you can probably see why this clinical trial certificate program is very close to my heart. And I am really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, great. Jihan, I'm going to stay with you since you actually gave a sneak peek about the clinical trial certificate program during your address last JSM. So let's start with the why. Why did you believe there was a need to build this program?
Thank you, Donna. I have worked in clinical trials for many, many years, and both in academic medical centers and as a faculty member in biostatistics. Over the time, I have come to believe strongly that there is still a meaningful gap between academic statistical training and the realities of a clinical trial practice. During my own training, of course, I learned rigorous statistical theory and methodology. But when I entered real oncology trials, I quickly realized how much I still needed to learn. For example, when I first heard about phase one and phase two trials, I had no idea what that meant. Also, I thought, What's the clinical trial protocol, and what do biostatisticians do to prepare for it? Of course, training programs today are much better and more modern than they were when I was a student long time ago. But I still see the same challenges. When statisticians enter clinical trial settings, it often takes a substantial time. I mean, really, I mean a substantial time. Mentorship and collective effort before they fully understand how these studies actually operate. Clinical trials are not just about statistical methods. They involve regulatory expectations, protocol development, multidisciplinary communication, operational limitations, and patient safety, interim decision making, and interpretation under uncertainty. At the same time, trials are becoming more complex. We now see adaptive designs, biomarker-driven studies, and the growing use of AI tools in clinical research. Meanwhile, the demand for statisticians in pharmaceutical companies, CROs, and academic medical centers continues to increase. So ASA wanted to create a more structured pathway to help statisticians gain practical clinical trial experience before entering these environments. The goal is quite simple: to help our members to become more prepared, more confident, and more effective in real clinical research settings. So that's my strong why we needed this program.
Thanks very much. Nolan, I know that you are chairing the steering committee that's been involved in the development of the program. Anything that you want to add to that why?
I think Jian covered it all there. I was thinking that along the same lines as what she shared, many statisticians get a strong theoretical training, but clinical trials require a very specific applied skill set. And things that Jian mentioned, like protocol development and navigating regulatory considerations and even endpoint selection, these things aren't aspects that are covered in a very structured way in our graduate programs. And so people often end up learning them informally on the job, which can be inefficient and sometimes inconsistent. So we're trying to bridge that gap with this program and help people translate their statistical foundation into the context of real-world clinical research, where these decisions can directly impact patient care and regulatory approval.
So, Nolan, both of you have addressed this to a certain extent, but just to add on to a bit to what you were saying. So, you had a group in mind when you decided to build this curriculum. So, which people would those be? Like early career people who haven't had the methodological training and the theory training, but not the practical training, or people who might want to switch from what they're doing into clinical trials research? Who was your target audience or audiences?
Yeah, thank you, Ron, for the question. The certificate program is really designed to span that spectrum, which is what makes this program unique, in my opinion. So we're targeting quantitatively trained individuals, so people with graduate-level backgrounds in statistics or biostatistics, data science, or other related fields, but they could be at very different stages of their career. So this could include early career individuals, such as recent master's graduates trying to break into pharmaceutical or clinical trial space. But it also could be mid-career statisticians who might be pivoting from other areas. So we also envision academic researchers who want to be more deeply involved in clinical studies, because as we mentioned, this requires a very specific applied skill set to execute the clinical trials. So it's less about where you are in your career and more about whether you have the quantitative foundation and want to apply it to clinical trials.
Jihan, did Nolan leave out any groups?
What Nolan said is absolutely right. This program is designed to be broad enough to support multiple career stages while remaining focused on practical clinical trial competency. But also, we expected interest from academic researchers who collaborated already on clinical studies, but they wanted a deeper understanding of trial operations and statistical leadership. If statisticians focus on only on methodological aspect of trials, our influence could remain very limited. But when we also understand the broad clinical, operational, and regulatory landscape, we are better positioned to take on leadership roles and contribute more to decision making. So in that sense, it's really enough to support multiple career stages for this program.
Great. Thank you. And Jihan, I'll stay with you because I remember well that your theme for your presidential year was building bridges. In talking with you and the other members of the steering committee, I understand that the description is bridging statistical foundations and medical research implementation. Can you say a little bit more about why that bridge is so hard to cross without the structured training?
So you know how much I love the building bridges, right? I think it's because the two worlds operated very differently. Graduate program understandably focused on statistical theory, computation, and methodology, but real clinical trials involve many additional dimensions that are typical to learn from textbooks alone or classrooms. For example, statisticians need to understand how protocols are returned, how endpoints are selected. I think also a lot of statisticians haven't heard what is the endpoint. We only use the primary outcome variables, but in clinical trials, we call endpoints. And how also FDA guidance affects analysis decisions, how data are collected and monitored, and how multidisciplinary teams function under pressure. Every communication, even communication, becomes critically important. For example, a statistician may need to explain uncertainty or risk to clinicians, investigators, regulators, or company leadership. Not all are trained in our own language. So without a structured exposure, many people learn these lessons only through trial and error. After entering the workforce, that can be stressful and inefficient. Do you remember that we had a first initial meeting with the instructors? I remember Susan Halavi from the Duke University saying that many statisticians learned clinical trials through trial and error, and over the years, we accumulated a great deal of practical knowledge. Now we have a responsibility to pass that experience on to the next generation of statisticians. Otherwise, we risk losing important opportunities to strengthen both our profession and our impact in clinical research. So I feel the same way, that this program will be a great way to enhance our profession. That's why I'm so looking forward. I'm so excited to build another bridges.
Thanks very much. Nolan, I want to ask you about the structure of the program, but before I do that, do you want to add anything into that transition, the walking over the bridge?
Sure. I think Jihan covered it beautifully. The only thing I might add is, while she's correct that we often learn these aspects on a trial and error basis, I would just add that that also is done under time pressure. We're often strapped with tight deadlines and everything's due yesterday. This goes beyond the clinical trial space, but we're often having to do this under very heavy time crunch. And I think this program is going to provide people with the time and space to really learn these concepts without feeling that time pressure that we normally feel in our day jobs.
That's great. And I want to stay with you to talk a little bit more about the program structure and how the committee came up with the structure. I know that it will be cohort-based and that it will be online, but tell me a little bit more about how you decided on the topics and planned out the certificate program.
First of all, how we decided on the structure, I think we wanted something that balanced flexibility with engagement, engage with your colleagues that you will be participating in the certificate with. So the two-part weekly model that we came up with came out of that desire. Participants will complete asynchronous material on their own time, things like recorded lectures, readings, and exercises. So it's accessible to people who are working full-time. And then we pair that with a live synchronous session each week. That's where the deeper learning happens, discussion, there's Q&A, interaction with instructors and other mentors and your peers in the program. So that's really how we wanted to structure the program, to have those two pieces really be the way that this is laid out. The cohort model was very intentional. Clinical trials are inherently collaborative. We talked about that already in this conversation. So we wanted participants to learn in a community and build connections, not just consume content in isolation. As far as the content goes, Gian and I should both acknowledge the rest of our committee that's been working on this with us, Lissa Lavange and Antia Horing and Amarjot Kaur. We had a lot of back and forth about the content and what should make the final cut for this program in its initial year. And the content itself didn't require a lot of back and forth. There was a little bit of that, but where to place things, the order in which the participants will be exposed to the content had quite a bit of back and forth. So we had a committee that worked very well together, and we had a nice back and forth on in our weekly meetings to ultimately land on this first cohorts program.
Donna, Nolan mentioned we spent a lot of time discussing this, and we wanted the program to be accessible, right? Accessible to participants across different locations and different career stages, including working professionals. Online format allows broad participation while keeping the program flexible. And at the same time, we didn't want it to become a passive watch videos and move on experience. That sounds so boring, even personally to me. So clinical trials are highly collaborative, and Nolan emphasized that. So interaction matters. And this is why we chose a cohort-based structures. Participants will move through the program together, right? And engage in discussions, solve problems collaboratively, and learn from the both the faculty, instructors, and peers. We also felt strongly about including the capstone practicum. We did not want the participants to simply memorize the concepts, you know, all those things. We wanted them to apply knowledge to realistic clinical trial problems. In many ways, the structure we built reflected how statisticians actually work in clinical research through teamwork, communication, and practical problem solving. That's why we decided to adopt a cohort-based online program. And it took a long time, a discussion among these committee members. So
that's great. And I'll just let our listeners know that the show notes will include a link to the certificate program's website so that folks can see the application and if they're interested in applying and learn a little bit more about what the specific content that will be delivered over the course of the certificate program.
So thanks for that, Donna. And Jihan, I want to come back to you because we've been working together on the board. You've had two stints there for a while. And one of the first things I learned about you was how very deeply you feel and are constantly focused on the fact that the people participating in the research studies that you're involved in are people. And they are going through difficult things at times, maybe the most difficult things that they've had to go through. And you always have that focus in mind. So I wanted to ask you, when it came to building this curriculum, how did you incorporate that aspect of how you view your research when you were part of the team designing this curriculum?
Thank you, Ron. You are right. You know, the way I see the data is slightly different from the methodological statisticians per se. So, I mean, each data point reflecting the patient's life. That's how I see the data. So absolutely right. Clinical trials are fundamentally about patients. Statistical decisions in trials are not abstract mathematical exercises. They can directly affect treatment development, regulatory approval, and ultimately patient care. That perspective shaped the curriculum significantly. Of course, we will teach new emerging statistical methodology and design principles, but we also wanted participants to understand why rigor matters. Poor endpoint selection, for example, inadequate monitoring, weak data quality, or inappropriate interpretation can have real serious consequences. And we also debated a balance. There is simply too much material to cover fully in a single certificate program. So the challenge was deciding what is the most essential and practical for patient care perspective. We focused on the areas where statisticians often face steep learning curves in real-world clinical trial settings while creating framework that participants can continue to expand throughout their careers. At the end of the day, we wanted participants to understand that clinical trials are not just about method or models. They are about patients and decisions that can affect their lives. That's my also personal hope, but I think that this the theme of this clinical trial certificate programs are very well aligned to that.
One thing I would add is we felt strongly about including a capstone experience. And I think Gian's mentioned this in one of her previous answers as well, but giving the participants in the program the chance to work on a real project, designing, analyzing, interpreting real studies helps connect the material to the kinds of decisions they'll actually face that impact patients. And so not just making this a didactic exercise where we have lectures and exercises for the participants to do, but also engage them in a real world capstone project. It contributes to this mentality that this is about the patients and we want our participants to come away with that mentality after participating in this program.
Nolan, I'm going to stay with you and we take a step back from the clinical trial certificate program and talk a little bit about the statistician's role in clinical research more broadly. You've shared that you direct the cancer center and you also train students. And so with those roles in mind, what could you share? What would you share about how you see the statistician's role in the clinical research landscape?
Thanks, Donna. First of all, I think this role is much broader than people sometimes realize. Statisticians shouldn't just be brought in at the analysis stage. Ideally, we're involved from the very beginning in the design, but also just the concept of the trial and the research questions that are being asked. And Jian's talked a little bit about endpoint selection, all of these things on the front end, helping to define the research questions, select endpoints, design the study, determine how evidence will be generated and the data analyzed. We should be involved over the lifespan of the clinical trial. In my experience, a lot of clinical investigators come to me expecting that they're going to fit their study into some standard template or design, a traditional trial design. But a big part of my role, as I see it, is working with them to refine the objectives and then tailor the design to actually answer the questions they're interested in. Sometimes I feel like the clinician might come to me trying to fit their question into a design, and I want to fit their design to a question. So it's kind of reversing the mentality there. And I think some of the most rewarding parts of my job, times that I've felt most rewarded by my work, have been those times where one of my collaborators has said, I've never thought about that before. And then we start to talk about something that wasn't even on their radar to begin with, but actually turns out what they're interested in doing. And then we tailor design to answer that question and really come up with something innovative. So this means moving away from some default approach and thinking more creatively about what design is most appropriate. Statisticians also play a key role in ensuring rigor and integrity. We've talked about that already in this conversation. We're making sure the study is designed in a way that produces reliable and interpretable results. And importantly, we as translators between disciplines, we're bridging clinical, operational, and regulatory perspectives in a way that ultimately supports better decisions for patients. I think the statistician needs to know something about all of those areas of the clinical trial for it to really work well, in my view. And so that's what I think the statistician being involved over the complete life cycle of the clinical trial from the early conception through the analysis and publishing of results, and also being well-versed in the clinical, operational, of course, statistical and regulatory aspects of the trial make for the best trials.
That's great. Jihan, I know you're also passionate about the statistician's role, so share some thoughts on that.
Thank you, Donna. First of all, Nolan said beautifully, that's exactly what I wanted to say, but this is actually a topic I have been advocating for many, many years, right? So I believe, as Nolan said, statisticians should be viewed as a central scientific partners in a clinical research, not just simply as a technical consultants, you know, brought in at the design or analysis stage. As also Nolan mentioned that one, in reality, statisticians are often involved throughout the entire process. In fact, I experienced this very directly in a recent clinical trial we conducted in immunocompromised cancer patients. During the study, interim analysis began showing concerning early safety signals, and those findings became part of the important discussions about patients' safety and whether the trial should continue as planned or not. Later, after the study received national attention, I found myself spending a great deal of time explaining what a non-inferiority trial actually means to clinicians and the public without making it overly technical. So that experience clearly reminded me that statisticians do much more than analyze data. We help guide scientific decisions, protect study integrity, also Nolan mentioned, and communicate evidence responsibly. As a clinical research becomes more data intensive and AI driven, I think that the role becomes even more important. That's how I believe.
Donna, can I just add one more thing to that? I remember several times asking questions in initial meetings with clinicians and ultimately getting to a place where I would say, you came here with this question, but it sounds like you want to do this. Is this what you want to do? And the clinician says, yes, but I didn't know we could do that. And so I think part of our job is to show them that we can do that, right? And so if we're really on the forefront of innovative trial design, then we can show our clinical collaborators things that, perhaps they haven't thought about in ways to design trials.
Absolutely, Nolan, that's the same thing. So it happened to my in daily work. A lot of initial meetings is filled with questions by statisticians. You know, why is that? Why do you do that? Why did you choose this? And in the end of the conversation, sometimes I hear that I never thought about it. You know, so that's, I think, so that our role is creating a lot of testable questions. That is very important for our profession.
Wow, I love all of that. And it reminds me of something that I continually say to groups when I get the opportunities to go out and talk to the students or others, that it's a great time to be a statistician because we just get to do a lot of really interesting things. And when I talk to these groups, it's almost impossible to have a discussion with them without being asked about AI. So I don't think we can let this conversation go without asking you about AI as well. And that is to say, how you might see it changing a clinical trial design, analysis, any of these things that we've been talking about today. So, Jian, let's start with you on that.
Thank you, Ron. Of course, AI, we cannot continue the conversation without AI. What I observe is that AI is beginning to influence some part of clinical trials, although I think we are still in the early stages. Right now, I see the biggest impact in areas such as patient recruitment, eligibility screening from electronic health records, EHR data, real-time monitoring, and management of a large and complex data set. We are also starting to see new therapies and treatment strategies that incorporated AI algorithms themselves, particularly in personalized medicine and biomarker-driven treatment approaches. That created additional challenges for clinical trial design, validation, and evaluation. But the principles of clinical trials, careful study design and reliable endpoints, patient safety, and rigorous evidence evaluation remain the same. In some ways, AI may actually make statistical thinking even more important because the data and decision-making process are becoming more complex. That is another reason programs like this certificate initiative matters. The future clinical trial workforce will need not only strong statistical skills, but also practical understanding of how clinical research is changing in the AI era.
Thank you, Gian. Nolan, what is your thinking about AI these days?
Thanks, Ron. My thing is along the same line as Gian's. I think she covered that very well. I think the biggest impact will be augmenting, you know, not replacing statisticians. So AI is going to help with efficiency, as Gian pointed out, perhaps automating parts of the clinical trial process. But the core responsibilities around study design and inference and interpretation still are going to require careful judgment. So statisticians are going to play an important role in evaluating and appropriately integrating AI-driven methods into clinical trials. So in some ways, I think this makes structured training that we're offering here even more important because people need a strong foundation to use these tools responsibly.
Well, I can't wait to have the two of you back in about a year so we can do a retrospective on the first cohort of the clinical trial certificate program. So really looking forward to the next few months as it rolls out. So we have traditions on the Practical Significance podcast. And one of the traditions is we always like to end by asking our guests what they're reading, listening to, watching. So, Nolan, I'll start with you. What's on your TBR or playlist or movie watching, all of the above?
Well, on the reading front, I recently finished a book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, which explains how sleep is essential for our cognitive function and physical health and well-being, and how some of our modern habits are undermining that. I regularly listen to a podcast called Deep Questions by Professor Cal Newport, who's a professor of computer science at Georgetown. And he explores how to live and build a focused life in this world full of distractions. And his books are also excellent. I've read those as well. I don't watch a lot of TV. I have my job and three children. But whenever I have a few minutes in the evening, I've been watching the NBA playoffs with my sons. And I know that was a topic of the last episode of Practical Significance, I believe, someone talking about their MBA work. So that's been a nice way to unwind and spend some time with my family in the evenings.
And are you a player of basketball as well?
I was in my younger days.
Okay. Yes, Jihan, over to you. Okay. Watching, listening, reading, all of the above.
Thank you, Donna. I recently watched the movie Project Hail Mary. I generally don't go to the movie theater, but this is a special event. I'm also not a big fan of science fiction books or movies, but this movie was a remarkable exception for me. It brought me to tears and made me think about more even statistical thinking too, you know, the collaboration, uncertainty, meaning of life and purpose as well. So now I'm listening to the audiobook of the original project, Hail Mary by the Andy Weir. And my next plan is to watch it again in an IMAX theater, which is not available in the small college town where I live.
That is wonderful. And so I also know, though, that you are a musician. So you got to tell me one piece of music or one artist that you're listening to so I can add to my playlist.
Thank you. Actually, we had an annual concert last Sunday here at the University of Florida Music Hall. And then a lot of music we played, but one of the songs make some people cry was Vivaldi. So it's a very, I think, remarkable music. And I was never really also quite listening or understand about the Vivaldi, but this music, the Vivaldi was, for me, it was eye-opening. So if you have a chance, just to visit this classic piece of his music, Vivaldi.
That's great. Thank you so much. Well, and thank you to both of you for just a really wonderful conversation. And speaking of traditions, we have another tradition on Practical Significance, and that is to conclude with Ron's top 10. So I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ron, for his top 10.
Thank you, Donna. I spend too much time watching sports on TV. which means I see far too many drug advertisements. But after seeing six such commercials in a row during a sporting event, I muted the sound. In the quiet, I started thinking about pharmaceuticals that statisticians wish existed. So here is my top 10 list of medications statisticians would like to be able to prescribe. Number 10, Kazara, scientific name, choral causalase. This targets the neural pathway responsible for drawing causal arrows from scatter plots alone. Ask your statistician if Kazara is right for your observational study. Number 9, OpenStatix, scientific name, datahortimab. Reduces the territorial response to reasonable data sharing requests. Number 8, Dizynova, also known as Questionnaire-Vir, treats chronic double-barreled question syndrome, leading question disorder, and the dangerous belief that questionnaire design is simply writing some questions. Number 7, Think Yourself X, scientific name, Elucidadib, is indicated for researchers who accept AI output without verification. Number 6, Simpliva. Simplistipram stimulates the principle of parsimony and blocks the receptor that equates model complexity with scientific rigor. Number 5, Filgapizi, also known as imputamazine, promotes principled imputation and the willingness to ask why data are missing in the first place. Number 4, Randomax, also known as convenosampleide, suppresses the impulse to sample whoever is nearest, cheapest, or most willing. Number 3, Olivance, scientific name, cherrypicketide, promotes systematic search strategies, PRISMA compliance, and the discovery of inconvenient evidence. Number 2, Reproducix, scientific name, documentazole, stimulates natural production of README files, code comments, and data dictionaries. And the number one medication statisticians wish they could prescribe, Proactiva, scientific name, planihedepine, lowers everyone's blood pressure by stimulating researchers to engage statisticians early in the research development process. Well, that's it for this episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
Epicos AI is an AI-supported research integrity ecosystem developed by Metacres, redefining the journey from study design to publication. It assists researchers, statisticians, and journal editors in identifying methodological weaknesses and ensuring statistical rigor through validated AI tools. Exclusively for ASA members, Epicos AI now offers a one-week full-access trial. Simply create an account at epicosai.com and enter code Houston in the Have a Promo Code section of your personal dashboard to experience the future of research integrity. Strengthen the transparency and validity of your science with Epicos AI today. Your data has a
story. Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.